We got a real simple plan. One me and one mission.
Georgia has won the national championship. Touchdown!
You're a fan, you might think this is sports heaven. This might be college football heaven. Yeah.
This is ESPN's College Game Day Podcast. Now alongside Pete Thamel, here's Reese Davis.
Once is lucky, twice is a coincidence, three times is a streak. 15 beats to two again, and mental is to the physical as four is to one. This is an emergency Thursday night NCAA tournament edition of the College Game Day Podcast. Reese Davis and Pete Thamel. So all of the numbers. First, the 15 over two is Princeton over Arizona. The mental is to the physical as four is to one, Pete, is an old Bob Knight saying about mental toughness and making smart plays. The proverbial dumb loses more than smart wins. That refers to Furman and Virginia, which we will get to. We have to start. It's happened for the third straight year. A 15 seed beats a two. You can't look at the box score and figure out how Princeton beat Arizona. They just did. They just made plays at the end.
And with 10 minutes to go, you know, monitoring that game all day, and I wasn't watching it closely because it was just sort of the kind of game you expect between a 15 and a 2. It was a 9-point game. It was a 7-point game. There was like no imminent threat until there was. And by then you blinked and it was, you blinked and it was over. You know, a remarkable job by Princeton of hanging around and hanging around for Arizona. It was just a case of squandered opportunity to put Princeton away. And then there is an eternal pucker power that will forever be associated with this tournament. And you saw it from Arizona those last couple of possessions.
Well, that's what my son, happy Princeton alum. I don't know that he was watching that closely, though some of his Princeton baseball teammates actually went to the game, and one of them actually won some serious money on it by going Tigers on the money line against Arizona.
Ooh, what was that payout? Do you know?
I do not know what the payout was, but I would imagine it was substantial. Yeah. But it was simply game pressure, Pete. If you go back, I went back and watched again the last 4 minutes of the game. There were a couple of things. I think it was Myron Metcalf who in a reaction article said that Arizona played with arrogance and he didn't mean the good kind. And they did. And then it got to a point in that final 4 minutes where you could almost feel Arizona going, oh my gosh, these guys might beat us. Mm-hmm. And you could feel Princeton going, I think we can beat them. And you know, that is the whole thing of putting game pressure on in a one-shot deal in the tournament. Man, Mitch Henderson, who was a member of that Princeton team that beat UCLA in 96 and has been the basketball coach there for a long time, it's different in the Ivy League. Still, Mitch is a terrific coach. Is the only coach I've ever done a game with where he didn't show up at the shoot-around. But that was because of the class schedules. They couldn't have your traditional shoot around. So they had two windows in which the guys came in and got up some shots if they wanted to. It was, it wasn't a whole Boeheim thing. We're not shooting on game day. It was like they all had to go to class. So, you know, this is a different deal. And for him to put together a team like this that, you know, really came close to going to the tournament last year and then made those plays and got the confidence down the stretch to win the game was pretty remarkable.
Yeah. And Mitch Henderson, who I've gotten to know pretty well over the years, just covering college basketball, was the starting point guard on that 1996 team that upset UCLA. One of the more famous upsets in tournament history, even though it was not like a 215 or a 116, but UCLA was the defending champ from 95. UCLA losing to Princeton in the Hoosier Dome resonates. I texted with Sean Gregory tonight, who was also on that team, who I used to work with when I was at Sports Illustrated. And he was at Time. We were kind of at sister publications. And Sean Gregory is a, you know, Princeton grad and a Princeton honk. And he texted me a picture of the cold beer he was drinking tonight. But he told me that Mitch Henderson didn't start at point guard that year until the play-in playoff game where they had to beat Penn, which I'd forgotten that, you know, whatever, 25 years ago, you're not going to remember, right? Mm-hmm. And he only started three games that season, the playoff, and then they lost to Mississippi State, and he started that play-in game. And it was obviously, I believe, Gabe Llewellyn. Is that right, Reese?
Yeah, yeah,
you Gabe Llewellyn. Read that on a wrap somewhere in Flint, Michigan, right?
No, man, by then I was at ESPN.
Oh, you were at ESPN? Okay.
Yeah, all right. That.
All right, I got your career clock wrong. I was a sophomore at Syracuse, so
rub that in. Why don't you go ahead? Yeah, I get
maybe
it.
A freshman actually. Yeah, because I think they made the Final Four that year with John Wallace and Cuses in the house. But yes, your box score point is excellent. I mean, what's the key to an upset? Hitting 3-point shot. Well, Princeton was 4 of 25 from 3-point range. I mean, that's preposterous, absolutely mm-hmm. preposterous. They turned the ball over 11 times, which isn't like a ton, but it wasn't like they played some perfect game. They had less assists than turnovers, which is quite frankly very un-Princeton-like. Mm-hmm. They had 9 assists to that. So, yeah, they just kind of stripped the game down, brought it. What's the old saying in football? They brought the game out to deep water, and mm-hmm. at the end, Arizona couldn't swim.
Yeah. Tosin Awoma was terrific inside, mm-hmm. son of a doctor coming over from England and having one of the great moments there, and an embarrassing one too for Arizona, because Arizona should have won this game. There's no excuse. I need to have the box score right in front of me, but I think they got out rebounded. I know Princeton had more blocked shots than they did. And, you know, Myron's terminology of calling it arrogance is probably right, but you also don't want to take away from Princeton. And also the magnitude of this tournament. Every year, guys' careers are made and broken from a coaching mm-hmm. standpoint. Players are etched in lore forever, or their agonizing faces will be part of, part of highlight reels forever because of the one-shot deal nature of it. And, you know, typically the one thing the last couple of years, it's been a little bit different, is this game was played at Princeton's pace. And typically when you have these mammoth upsets, it's because teams slow the other one down. That's exactly what happened in this game. Arizona, Princeton doesn't play terribly slowly, but Arizona tries to play fast, and they're in the 50s. I mean, come on, you know, you need to have more offense than that and get up and down the floor a little better than they did. But the previous two, St. Peter's and beating Kentucky and Oral Roberts taking down Ohio State on the way, they scored. Mm-hmm. And, you know, so typically it's the slowdown teams that, you know, muck the game up, but really as it pertains to these two big first round upsets, the slowdown team sort of messed it up for themselves in Virginia, because Furman wants to play a little bit faster. And I know you're a big Furman fan, but you know, Virginia kept them in the game really with pace, and then with just the catastrophic error at the end.
Oh God,
Kihei Clark. I mean, if you had said before this tournament started to me, Pete, if you'd said, like you like to quiz me from time to time, give me a guy who's going to make a catastrophic mistake and lead to a huge upset in the first round. This is maybe slightly hyperbolic, but Kihei Clark might have been the last guy on my list. He would have been way down there, I can tell you that, because it was very uncharacteristic of him to do that. They had timeout, and you're better off to 5-second count, foul, anything.
If you put together like an all solid no mistake team, like and did a starting five, and you put Kihei Clark on there as the point guard, I wouldn't blink. I couldn't help Reese but be struck by he made one of the greatest passes in the history of the NCAA tournament to beat Purdue in that epic, unbelievable back and forth Elite Eight game in when they won the title. So that was what, 2019, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
And Kihei Clark, it was like late in the clock, no panic. Zipped it down, and it led to the winning shot. And it was one of the rare cases where the pass got more attention to the shot. And not only the pass, but the wherewithal, time, score, like getting it to the right place, getting it to a shooter who could make it. Like everything about it was like this, this like perfect lightning strike of cerebral basketball play. And I mean, he just threw a discus from the baseline with a timeout left, with a guy opposite court wide open. Like, it just didn't make any sense. Just,
he's 80% free throw shooter too. Just hold the ball, you know, whatever it takes. And it, you know, that's, I mean, live ball turnover was like the last thing you needed there. They also, you know, they also faced the 1-3-1 and treated it like they got stuck in the middle of a corn maze and couldn't figure their way out or something, which was surprising to see from them. They did a lot of uncharacteristic things. Our buddy Cavman, as I refer to our College Game Day basketball producer, Pete, because he's in football, you might know him better as Jeff Brown, but I refer to him on the air as Cavman, because Cavman, he loves all things Virginia, but he particularly loves Virginia basketball. So he,
how's he doing?
Not well, not well. He texted our group and said, find someone else to produce. I'm done with college basketball. So that's not good, huh?
That's not a
good thing. That's not good. So at one point I said to him, I texted back to the group. I said, hey, just remember Kihei and Purdue. Most people don't get that moment and just forget the last, you know, 6-7 seconds ever happened. And Billis, of course, responds, well, nothing in the rule book says he can't have both. And I said, I'm trying to say some encouraging words to our friend who's in agony and distress, Billis. You're not helping. You know,
I wonder if in like the pain rankings of a Virginia fan, if where this ranks compared to UMBC.
UMBC is worse. I think. I'm not a Virginia fan, but don't you think? Because that one will live in infamy.
They had some injuries in that game, if memory serves, didn't they?
They did.
Yeah. Well, and then they didn't have Vanderplas, our faithful listeners, who got a lot of bad picks from me. Was at least we're at least gifted to that little nugget about Vanderplas not playing and just really gumming up an offense that already could be pretty gummy.
Well, that's the thing, and there are too many of these games, and I don't want to go off on a tangent about what's wrong with college basketball, right? Because I love the sport, and everybody loves the tournament, and it gives you great, you know, it gives you great pleasure.
Today was fun, man.
It was fun. It was fun. There's no doubt about it. But if you look at the style of play, and I texted this to you, if Princeton and Arizona played a 59-55 game in January, nobody's watching that, right? And there were – for a while now, I think Arkansas and Missouri maybe got to 70 later, but early in the day, nobody but Alabama and Kansas got to 70, and they were playing 16 seeds. And you know, we've got this game basketball. I mean, generally in the NBA, this is where the NBA has figured it out. Basketball is an offensive game at its core with a defensive component, right?
Yeah,
they've got to find a way to let these guys play offense. They have to. And it's not just shortening the shot clock. It's some of the physical contact. It's consistent officiating. It's some adjustments in the block charge rules. There are a number of things we could go to. They have to, Pete, because the drama is tremendous. But how great would the drama be if the actual basketball were a little more aesthetically pleasing? You know what a good game was? You know what a good game was on Thursday? A really fun Auburn and Iowa was a really fun game.
It was a fun game. No. Good pace. Yep. That was played really well. So let's dovetail that observation, Reese, with — I did want to try to stump you with trivia. If you didn't look at the list, did you look at the list of the 10 other 15-2 upsets today? Did you look at the full list?
I honestly have not looked at the list.
How many of them can you name, Reese?
I don't know. Let's just start and I'll go, right? Okay. Go. And we'll see. All right. I don't know if I should work backwards or forward. I'll start working backwards. So you've got Princeton over Arizona. Mm-hmm. You've got St. Peter's over Kentucky. You've got Oral Roberts over Ohio State. You've got Norfolk State over Missouri.
Mm-hmm.
And Missouri will now benefit from one of those now. So all things come around eventually. So let's see, Norfolk State over Missouri. You've got Santa Clara over Arizona, because they're the only ones with two.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Hampton over Iowa State.
Mm-hmm.
You've got Oh, you've got Richmond over Syracuse, right?
Yes.
That's seven.
Jim Boeheim's worst loss.
Yeah. Yeah. Let me. Okay. Oh, you've got a Coppin State over South Carolina.
Mm-hmm.
That's
you're eight. You've got three left.
I've got three left. Wow. Yeah.
And I'll say this. They are pretty famous.
Okay. Pretty famous. So I've left out some famous ones.
Yes. One of them has a nickname that still resonates about a decade later for a plucky little burgeoning school in South Florida.
Oh, Dunk City. Yeah, they beat 15 over 2 Georgetown.
They did.
Florida Gulf Coast over Georgetown.
One involves the plucky mid-major that you've latched onto to make the Final Four.
To make the Final Four? I don't have a mid-major in the Final Four.
Think of sarcasm. Know who you're dealing with.
Oh, know my audience. Plucky. Right. I'm trying to think of which one it was. Was Lehigh the 15 when they beat Duke?
Okay. It was not Mercer. It was Lehigh.
Yeah. That was the 3-14 Mercer and Duke. And those happened in pretty close proximity together. Yes. So now.
So the last one, do you want one more hint or do you want to think about
it? Yeah. I'm disappointed that I need this many hints, especially with Dunk City and with Lehigh.
Yeah, this one is 2016. So there's 11 if you include that. Okay, 2016. And I believe they made it to the Sweet 16. Involves the Hall of Fame coach lost. And I'm trying to remember. Oh, and Giddy Potts was involved.
Oh, yeah. I should have known that because Gil Branchford, my basketball researcher, is a Michigan State guy, Middle Tennessee over at Michigan State.
You did well, Reese. Don't beat yourself up. That's a good run on your 15s over twos. Were you at any of them?
No.
You're probably in the studio for a lot of years.
Yeah, I was in studio for a lot of them. The only one the biggest upset that I've ever been in the arena for in the NCAA tournament was I was in the arena when Austin Peay beat Illinois. So I was still in college and
cool.
Vital, you know, I think Vital had promised to stand on his head. I can't remember. He offered something outrageous to do if Austin Peay beat Illinois, and they did. And the thing that people forget about that was the next round, if Austin Peay hadn't missed, I mean, you can't imagine how many free throws they missed in the round of 32 and lost a really close game to Billy Donovan and Providence, who then went on to the Final Four. Absolutely had them beaten. And absolutely had them beaten. And they couldn't make a free throw at the, like for the last 2 minutes of the game to finish it. And Providence pulled it out and ended up going to Final Four. That was Austin Peay over Illinois was the biggest upset that I've ever been in attendance for in the NCAA tournament. How about you?
I was at Dunk City in Philadelphia.
You were at Dunk City. Oh, wow.
I was at Dunk City in Philadelphia. And Georgetown really wasn't in that game for a dribble. It was pretty impressive. But they cut it to 8 or 6 in the second half, if memory serves me right. And they didn't just run a lob. They Brett Comer went down the lane and did some side from the hip, and some dude came in and just cracked it. And you could just see Georgetown's bench just fall over. Like they were little game board pieces. I mean, it was just it was over. The arena went nuts. That game was a lot of fun.
Hey there. Did you know Kroger always gives you savings and rewards on top of our lower than low prices? And when you download the Kroger app, you'll enjoy over $500 in savings every week with digital coupons. And don't forget fuel points to help you save up to $1 per gallon at the pump. Want to save even more? With a Boost membership, you'll get double fuel points and free delivery. So shop and save big at Kroger today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Savings may vary by state. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
The 2024 NFL Draft heads to Detroit, and it's time to see who gets the job.
Caleb is a unique and special talent throwing the football.
And what sets them apart.
The Heisman Trophy winner is Jaden Daniels.
All of the greats were hired here.
What a throw by Mahomes.
See who gets the job.
Are you ready?
The 2024 NFL Draft begins Thursday, April 25th on ESPN, ABC, and NFL Network.
Let's talk a little bit about what this does to the bracket overall. Now,
that was a talkative and undisciplined transition by me into why.
That's okay. No, that was fun. That was actually that was actually fun. I hope the people are trying to name it along. Davis, you idiot! I can't believe you don't remember, because most of the Duke haters certainly remember Duke Lehigh for sure.
Oh yeah.
I think, look, Alabama, especially Brandon Miller's groin injury, is an issue. They won't get away anymore without him scoring. He didn't need to score today. They got everybody else involved. Some guys who've been struggling got going, but now they get Maryland. But beyond that, in the bracket, I mean, San Diego State's a good defensive team who's offensively challenged. You still have your Furman squad. Baylor's still sitting there, but Arizona's gone. I mean, this thing has already opened up. Now it's up to Alabama to take advantage of the fact that this is really wide open with the two and the four seed out of the way.
Oh yeah, for sure. And you know, there are now two groin injuries that could really define the rest of the tournament, right? Because obviously Sasser re-injured his groin tonight, and for our listeners who went to bed at a reasonable hour tonight, that was probably the biggest development from the Houston Northern Kentucky game, which was a tussle for a little bit, but went away. Sasser was on the bench in the second half riding the exercise bike, and CBS reported, and the Houston Chronicle reported, that he had re-injured his groin in that period. But yeah, when you look at Alabama now, and it's and look, like, Baylor, the way they finished the season doesn't exactly scare you, right? Mm-hmm. Now, look, Maryland played pretty salty. I was pretty impressed with Maryland today. They took some punches, kept coming back. So give them a lot of credit. I hadn't seen a lot of San Diego State, Reese. I was impressed. Like, now, again, some of it was Charleston being a team of D2 overachievers. I thought it really got exposed today, because they just, like, were overwhelmed at times, I thought, by San Diego State's length and athleticism. But if Alabama doesn't come out of there, I feel like that bracket is poised to be my 7 seed or higher, a ribeye in Houston bracket.
That's a great point. And it will be a gargantuan missed opportunity, because having gone to school at Alabama and having followed Alabama basketball since the early 70s, Alabama basketball has been star-crossed in the tournament, sometimes of their own doing, sometimes with just bad luck. For instance, probably the best Alabama team prior to this one was the 1976 squad, who led Indiana, the undefeated Indiana national champion Bob Knight team, late in the game. And questionable foul call, didn't go their way. They lost. They've had games where they've missed free throws. They've had tough draws. They've run into, you know, they run into the proverbial buzzsaw. They played Michael Jordan in the state of North Carolina. They played, you know, they've done a lot of those things. But now they don't have any of that. This is completely opened up for them. And we'll see, we'll find out whether they can take advantage of it. Also in Birmingham on Saturday, Houston and Auburn team, which probably shot the ball better, and I've seen them play a number of times this year, seen them in person. They played offense better than they've played all year. Now, people, you know, hardcore basketball fans are going to go, Iowa's not a good defensive team, and they're correct. But Auburn's missed its share of open shots all season long, and they didn't. And now you've got the one seed playing what will be somewhat like a de facto road game with their star injured. That one's got all the makings in the Midwest too, of busting up that bracket a little bit and spoiling Houston's plans to play for the national championship at home or in their home city.
Yeah. Well, Houston basketball does not make it easy, right? They're a little bit of a more evolved version of Virginia, where pace and identity don't lend them to 95 to 75 games, right? Like, they're going to blow you out by 12. That's just sort of how Kelvin has always designed it. The old joke when he was at Oklahoma was that he always needed a new offensive coordinator. maybe the old pirate could have helped him when he was there. God rest his God rest his soul. But I think that's fascinating, and I think there could be some really salty Samsons meaning Kelvin, Kellen, and the whole crew, if they do lose to Bruce Pearl and Auburn, and an arena that, like, so you're always going to get rooted against if you're the one seed
of
in
course.
That weekend game.
Yeah.
And then you combine it with now I wonder if the Alabama fans, this is actually an interesting question, would the Alabama fans root for Auburn? I don't think you can.
Under some circumstances, they might, but I think there's enough vitriol there now that probably not.
That game's not,
ordinarily you'd root against the one seed, and maybe even if it were on your side of the bracket, that's not even until the national championship game. So I'm not sure that they'll get behind Houston to oppose Auburn. Auburn has a way, man. They always find a way to win games in the tournament. That dates back to, to Sonny Smith and Cliff Ellis, and now Bruce has been doing it too. That was a really, really good win and impressive performance for them. And Houston, especially if it doesn't have Sasser, will have its hands full, and that game is likely to be a rock fight too. That game might be very similar to that Houston Villanova game in the Elite Eight last year, where it felt like first one to 46 was going to win, for a long time. So,
and I don't want to declare Sasser out,
right?
But he is worth monitoring. Game time decision. There'll be updates for those who invest. To go back to our Friday pods during football season, you may want to invest with the best information before you dabble on Houston in the next round. Let me ask you this, Reese. We sort of dabbled in and out of the 15-2 conversation. Give me two or three reasons why we have had 15s over twos 3 years in a row when I have the history of it up. I had the history of it up right here. Give me one second.
What is it, like 11 and 138 or 9 or whatever? We have another 15. Yeah, we had another 215. Texas won in a walk. So now something ridiculous like 139 and 11 or something like that. Is that what it is?
So we didn't have any from the go bracket expanded, none from 85 to 91. Then we have three in the 90s, one in the aughts, and then in the 2010s. All of a sudden, we had 1, 2, 3, 4 in 10 years, and then 3 years in a row. So what do you think macro this says about where the sport is and the whys?
It's hard to pinpoint any of it because I think it's a confluence of circumstances. One, there are fewer ultra elite teams than maybe there used to be. So the separation's a little different. I think the second thing is even though if you look at Princeton today in their experience chart, the Division I experience, they rank toward the bottom of Division I, but they're not a young team. Most of their guys are older. Remember, a couple of years ago, they didn't even have a season. So that probably plays into that stat a little bit because they're older guys.
Got it.
So I think that you have more old guys there. And then I think most of it is the mental, the game pressure that we talked about, the talk to players until they're blue in the face, and there's no way you can make Arizona think they're going to lose to Princeton. It's just hard to do. And then when it starts happening, you start getting a little tight, you start pressing, guards can't make a shot, and they didn't for Arizona. So I don't know that there's any macro reason that you can put your finger on other than the fact that I think maybe the constant turnover in roster means that there are fewer elite teams and twos are closer to what fives used to be, than maybe they were way
Great
back
point.
In the day. And now, and the 14s, 15s, 16s, many times, not all the time, many times they're older. So it's, I think it's that. And then sometimes it's pace too. I mean, that can, if you get a slow slog of a game, sometimes you really start pressing. You know, even though Georgetown, you mentioned that, that game, Georgetown, Florida, Gulf Coast a few years ago, that was the quintessential game. So it was Maryland, Baltimore County and Virginia. It was like, you could see the panic, you know, we might lose this. And then it got worse. And, So those are the only reasons I can think of, Pete. I don't know that there's any big trend in the way the game is being taught or coached or analytics or anything like that. I think it's more just sort of the human nature of the tournament and probably the fact that the constant turnover in roster means putting together really elite teams. They're more scarce. Just aren't as many of them.
Yeah, I think those are really good points, Reese. And My two sort of macro adds to that would be, one, it's interesting that three very different teams pulled these upsets 3 years in a row, right? Like Princeton and St. Peter's, even though they're in the same state, have actually nothing in common, right? Like there's no thread that ties through them. And Oral Roberts is completely different too. And, you know, you have Max Asemus. Obviously you had Doug Edert and, you know, that the magic of Doug Edert, coming off the bench to slay Kentucky last year. And then obviously you have a Princeton team, but it's funny. They weren't like backdoor crazy or, you know what I mean? Like right. It wasn't like right. The stereotypical Princeton that literally developed a style of offense that perpetuated through basketball for decades. So I think it's telling that they're all different, if that makes sense. And I think that complements my macro observation, which is, I went on so Jonathan Gavoni, who covers the NBA draft for us, I think does an unbelievable job and is the maestro of that field. And there are zero Arizona prospects on his 2023 draft list. And so, you know, you go back 15 years ago and you look at your two seeds in the tournament, and I guarantee you they have two players who would get drafted off each team on average, right? Like no brainer to that. I remember in the mid-2000s, Gary Parrish at CBS Sports did a study of all the championship teams who won. And he found that a vast majority of them had at least three future NBA players.
Right, yeah.
So you are getting really good teams. And I'm not saying Arizona's bad or anything like that, but I'm just like, there are not thumper difference makers. And it just means everybody looks a little bit more alike. The 12, like when VCU plays St. Mary's tomorrow, if you didn't know from the dark jerseys and the white jerseys who was the 12 and who was the 5, I don't think you'd be able to tell walking off the bus, right? Like the difference between the 12 and 5 just isn't what it was. So I think the difference between 2 and 15, because of the way talent distribution has changed, is not as vast as it used to be. I bumped into an NBA scout at BC a couple of weeks ago, and we were just talking about prospects and players, and we were chuckling basically that having the best prospects right now doesn't necessarily have a linear line to having the best team. Like Arkansas has two top 15 prospects. I'm sure Bill Self or who's ever coaching Kansas is going to be thrilled to be playing the Razorbacks because they have that kind of talent. But having the high-end talent means you have high-end prospects. It doesn't mean you have high-end production. And I don't know quite when that was a paradigm shift, maybe 5 years after one and done came in. But when you look at these guys and they're all good players, the NBA knows what they want and can draft and develop for a reason. But I think when you get past Brandon Miller, are there like even Jairus Walker-Houston, who's a fine player, is their third best player. Now he's going to be, according to Gavoni, the 7th pick in the draft. So there's just, that's a change. Keontae George, a wonderful player for Baylor. He's a liability on defense and has to grow in to being super productive. You can say the same thing about Anthony Black, and you can kind of go down the list and see that these guys who are elite prospects are not finished products.
Right. And that's really why the primary reason was Brandon Miller, but the other two, Alabama's got two other potential lottery picks that may not be lottery picks this year, but when they, if they stay or when they come out. And and Noah Clowney and Ryland Griffin, who has been up and down. He probably could really do himself a favor financially by going back to school next year. But, you know, that
Clowney too, sure, really. Like, he Clowney could end up in too. The first round, but like,
yeah, Clowney another year, and I won't go too far off on a tangent. Clowney in another year could easily be a high lottery pick. He's really a talented guy and a young guy. So, anything else before we go that struck you? Because we're going to do this again on Friday night. Anything else that struck you from Thursday?
Today reminded me of the old cliche about the month of March. It came in like a lion and out like a lamb. The night session was pretty quiet tonight. Just been trying to, trying to manufacture a little bit of drama, and Rick Barnes is trying to do it for us right now here. but it's not an 8-9 game, so I think he's going to make it.
Yeah.
What about you, Reese? Anything else jump out?
The one thing that's jumped out is the way Penn State played. I mean, we've known all season they can really shoot it. Funk had a sensational game for them. He's a tremendous shooter. Jalen Pickett's their best player, but you know, having a guy like Andrew Funk who can, you know, really fill it up. Another one of those veteran guys who's been around college basketball for a long time. Had a guy who played at Bucknell, I think, and if memory serves, I believe he was a Walter Ellis teammate back in the day. Mm-hmm. So, you know, and he can really shoot it, and he shot it. He shot the leather off of it in that game against Texas A&M. So I think the way they played, I didn't expect them to play that well. Wondered if A&M's physical defense would overwhelm them, but that, you know, it's a 7-10 game. I think it's sort of like what you talked about. It's the big upsets. It's the two injuries to the star players in the one seed. And what's that going to mean for this tournament? A little noise on Thursday. We'll see if there's any noise on Friday. Many times the first day noise is followed by a whole lot of chalk. So if any of you were chalk eating weasels in your bracket, Friday might be your day. So we'll see. And Pete and I are going to be keeping a close eye on that Indiana Kent State game tomorrow.
Oh yes, we are,
because you've got the Hoosiers in the Final Four.
Yeah, with Arizona. So just really shows you about the accuracy of my brackets. I had Furman. I was feeling chesty the first 2 hours of the day, Reese. One of my buddies who came over to watch games said he had Virginia in the Final Four. I was busting his chops, and it's a humbling experiment. Did I send that to the group text, like 1 in 9.5 quintillion chance to get a perfect bracket?
Yeah, I saw that with the numbers of grains of sand on Earth or whatever.
Hey man, this was good. I look forward to it. May have a cold beverage with me tomorrow night to celebrate the good end of the first few days. We just got a little seltzer water tonight here. So
I just have the College Game Day
tumbler
from our friends at Yeti filled with ice cold Diet Dr. Pepper. This has been the College Game Day Thursday of the NCAA Tournament Podcast. Thanks for downloading it, and thanks for indulging us as we ramble toward the end. We'll see you on Friday night and be much more concise. I doubt it.